February 18th. Carla, will you please call the roll?
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Saltzman?
Here.
Leonard? Adams?
Here. Let's start with communications. Could you please read item 137?
Request of David Morrison to address council regarding potential hazards of the new WiMAX system.
Can you turn your... Yeah. Mr. Morrison? Good morning. Welcome to the City Council.
Nice to see you, Sam.
Thanks. All you have to do is give us your first and last name, and you'll have 3 minutes.
David Morrison. While looking for a middle school for my daughter, I found that all the schools use Wi-Fi. Does the school board or city council know that Germany warned its citizens against using Wi-Fi? That the National Library of France recently dismantled Wi-Fi after 40% of its staff became ill? Ontario's Lakehead University refused Wi-Fi over health concerns? The teachers' union in Britain said wireless internet should be banned from schools? The European Parliament voted 522-16 to exercise greater precaution regarding electromagnetic radiation. Now we have WiMAX coming to Portland, which has been called Wi-Fi on steroids. Has there been any oversight of this technology that will blast everyone everywhere 24/7 with radio frequency? What will this background stressor do to our interpersonal relations and the mental health of people of all ages? 3% of the population are considered to be electrosensitive. This 24/7 exposure to WiMAX might result in social unrest because of low tolerance levels. With the rampant proliferation of wireless technology among young people, even toddlers, we need to teach educators and students about the dangers of cell phone use and other wireless technology, right alongside the dangers of tobacco and other health issues. Australian cancer researcher and brain surgeon Vinny Carana said the connection between cell phone use and brain cancer is irrefutable. He speculates there will be more casualties in the future than from tobacco and asbestos. We need more oversight and regulation, and there are things individual communities can do in spite of the 96 Telecommunications Act barring health concerns as a consideration in cell tower placement. For a review of over 2,000 studies of known biological effects of electromagnetic radiation, look at the BioInitiative report at bioinitiative.org. Shows the impact of radio frequency on immune function, neurological system, inflammation, stress, proteins, behavioral functioning at levels far lower than current FCC guidelines. Based on an existing body of science, grave concern is being raised by scientists about planned chronic exposure in the U.S. at these frequencies. So I hope the City Council and School Board will consider this information and our educational system and use our educational system as an entry point for understanding more about this enormous public health concern. Under 3 minutes.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Carla, will you please read the title for item 138?
Request of Cheryl Dilnick to address council regarding the mayor.
Good morning. Welcome to City Council. You have to just give us your first and last name, and you'll have 3 minutes.
Aloha. My name is Cheryl Dilnick. I wasn't born here in Oregon. I was born in the territory of Hawaii, too, away from Boston, and a sailor from Oregon. My family does go back to the late 1800s, maybe further. I haven't really done the research, but I have a great love for this city and for this state. In the past, we've witnessed the sexual shenanigans of our police department. More recently, Neil Goldschmidt had the nerve to admit having sex with an underage babysitter. In my condensed version, as I see it, is he admitted it, thumbed his nose at all of us, and walked on down the hall because the statute of limitations is up. Personally, I've had many experiences with the statute of limitations being up. And I remember standing waiting for justice, and justice never came. I felt totally outraged. Now here we are again, suffering yet another inappropriate situation brought on by you, sir, our newly elected mayor. And I think enough is enough. We've lost all confidence in you, and no one I've talked to has any faith in you. I've been okay with sitting at home being the sofa politician or the sofa radical, yelling at the TV when it's wrong, and crying when it's sad, and laughing when it's funny. This isn't funny. Watching the world go by and having faith that everything will be taken care of without input on my part. I've been comfortable with that, and maybe I'm wrong. Mr. Mayor, I'd like to know, how do parents explain this whole situation to their children? It's shameful. Personally, I'm surprised you're still here. I think you know what's right and wrong. And I think you know the outcome and what's going to happen. But you can save us all a world of hurt. I mean, we're already humiliated. But you could come out shining. You know, we know that everybody is hurting financially, whether it's a city, the state. And you have the opportunity to resign now, to save this city, the little drop in the bucket of your income until we can appoint someone else. Save us the hassle of having to go through the recall rigmarole when you know how it's going to end. Please, I'm asking you to step down. I think I speak for more than myself when I invite you to be successful somewhere else. Aloha. Thank you.
So in the council, when you want to show your support for something, you wave your hands like this. Can you please read item 140?
139.
Sorry, 139.
Request of Tim Cook to address council regarding the residential permit process.
Could I ask for a point of order?
Mr. Cook, we're in council, we're in citizen communication right now, sir. So we need to give folks that have signed up for this their due. Good morning. Welcome to the City Council.
Thank
All we
you.
Need is your first and last name.
I'm Tim Cook. Thank you, Mayor Adams and the council, for the opportunity to speak. This is an important issue for me, so I hope it falls on open ears. I'm Tim Cook, the owner of Envy Construction, which is a residential remodeling company in Portland. My testimony comes at the request of the Small Business Advisory Council, which has asked me to share my opinion and provide a review and some insight on what's working well with the Bureau of Development Services, specifically the Field Issuance Remodel Program. As you most likely know, residential construction is a tough and highly regulated industry, which the inspection permit process can at times be the most challenging. What is challenging for homeowners is they aren't always aware that the home they've lived in for years most likely has inherent code violations that may need to be addressed in the process of a remodel. Maybe in the past when Grandpa did some remodel work, he may have decided for some reason not to follow the building codes of the day. It's also important to note that codes change all the time. A brand new home that was wired with electricity only a few years ago would fall flat on its face with many code violations today. There's another challenge that's inherent when you have more than one person working in a room, and that's interpretation. Building code is like religious text. Your final outcome depends on if the interpreter is a liberal or a fundamentalist. I have found over the years that if homeowners are reluctant to purchase permits, it's not because of the cost of the permits. It's because of the nightmares that can happen when we have some of these code violations during the remodel process. What's helped our business avoid these potential pitfalls is the Field Issuance Remodel Program. This program has been in operation by the Bureau of Development Services for over 5 years, and our company was on the waiting list for almost a year and a half. The new format means that contractors can request a visit to the job site and get interpretation, however liberal or conservative, before the job is started. Once we have preliminary consultation on site from the inspector, we're able to call that same inspector back for every additional inspection. We can also call the inspector at any time for advice before he or she arrives for a formal inspection, thus increasing our chances of being ready and in compliance. Let's see. These inspections are not easier to pass by any means. We're just able to get consistent interpretation when we need it at the job site. The FIR program has been a stimulus to our company, and it's much more service-oriented, which gives us an advantage to complete many jobs that would be too challenging with the old system.
Thank you, Mr. Cook. I'm going to pass on your remarks to the inspectors at BDS. They'll appreciate Great. That very much. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Carla, could you read the title for item 140?
Request of Victoria Taft to address council regarding the mayor.
Good morning. Welcome to City Council.
Thank you very much.
We only need your first and last name, and you'll have 3 minutes.
Thank you very much. My name is Victoria Taft, and I live and I work and I vote in Portland, Oregon. And at this point, I would respectfully ask for a point of order to suspend the rules of protocol and allow applause if people agree with what I have to say this morning. Would somebody be willing to do that? All right. Well, we applauded the last time I was here, so maybe it'll happen again. I'm here today to call on Mayor Sam Adams to resign, but then again, you knew that. And I come here on behalf of my KPAM listeners, and among them, hundreds who have sent me emails calling on you to resign, some of whom are here today, some of those folks who wrote the emails, and I have those emails here, and of course, I forwarded every single one of them to all of you. I grew up here in Portland, Oregon. I went to school here. I am a native, and this is my city. Keith and I are bringing up our girls here, and they're part of the reason I'm here today. They've heard me talk on the radio about you, and they've said to me, Mom, why are you so tough on Sam? Because they've met you, and they've heard me speak of you in glowing terms. We are politically poles apart, but we have a rapport, and they know that, and so does my whole family. And I tell them I'm not being tough on Sam. I am merely holding up a mirror to him and saying, look, you, the mayor, have, through your actions, distorted the image of yourself, of Portland, and of us. And all with unethical, possibly illegal, probably illegal, and certainly immoral actions. My kids are nearly the same age as that kid you had sex with. Those actions have reduced Portland to a punchline. Late-night TV comedians usually reserve their worst swipes for the right-leaning politicians, but you're right there with them. Where can an 18-year-old have a Sam Adams? Have you been looking for love in all the wrong places? Try the City Hall bathroom. We've been reduced to a punchline. You're not just a punchline. You're beside the point now. Recusing yourself from your own education committee, you've got U.S. senators who don't want to be in the same picture with you. You've got your staffers leaving. You said you'd leave if it were in the best interest of the city, and you're still here. Why aren't you gone? And you and your fellow commissioners are not listening again. Your Confederates refuse to be good stewards of the truth. You know, this is wrong, and you won't do anything to stand up for what's right and tell him to leave. You're guilty, Sam, but they are more guilty this morning. Because they think so little of the voters, they won't stand up for what's right and call on you to resign, and it's shameful and it's deceitful, and you won't listen to us. It's been a long time since you commissioners have listened. And remember the mirror I told you that I was holding up to Mayor Sam Adams? See who's standing behind Sam in that mirror. Those are the commissioners, Nick Fish, Dan Saltzman, Amanda Fritz, and Randy Leonard, and they stand mute while you flout the law and pretend there's nothing to see here. And it's not okay. Resign.
Thank you. Carla, would you please call the consent agenda item?
Item 141, request of Paul Edgar to address council regarding...
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Columbia River Crossing.
Sorry. Is Paul here?
Paul Edgar?
I don't see him. All right. Shall we move to the consent agenda item? I want to pull item number 145. Is there any other items that anyone would like to pull? If not, Carla, would you please call the roll on the consent agenda items?
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. That gets us to a 9:30 time certain. Could you please read the title for item number 142?
Declare intent to initiate local improvement district formation proceedings to construct sanitary sewer improvements to serve properties located north of Northwest Skyline Boulevard in the Royal Highlands Phase 2 Local Improvement District.
Commissioner Saltzman.
Thank you, Mayor. This is the second large project to be completed under the council-adopted 2008 non-conforming sewer plan for addressing private party sewers. I believe the first one was just last week, and actually second reading is today, for the properties on Gertz Road. So I'll turn it over to Andrew Abbey.
Thank you, Commissioner Saltzman. Good morning, Mayor Adams and Commissioners. I'm Andrew Abbey, Local Improvement District Administrator. With me today is Matt Hickey, the project manager of the Royal Highlands Phase 2 Local Improvement District project. Carla, if we could just switch to the slides. I wanted to just start by showing you a geographical overview. This is a bit of a difficult-to-find neighborhood. It's located north of Northwest Skyline Boulevard. You can see it there on the map. Here's a map of the LID and the properties that petitioned in favor. The properties that petitioned in favor are shaded in green. The properties that did not tender their petition support are in blue, and the properties that opted out of the LID are shaded in yellow. The properties that are opting out of the LID will remain within the LID boundary but will be exempted from assessment. In effect, the Bureau of Environmental Services is carrying a deferral on the cost of serving those properties, and in the future, those properties would pay the current level of fees to connect to the new sanitary sewer system. Just to recap the level of petition support, we had 20 properties that petitioned in favor. 6 properties did not petition in favor. The overall support for the LID is measured by the assessment methodology of 78.2% of the estimated assessment. And under the Party Line Sewer Program, BES is capping most of the cost of the project except for right-of-way at $1.83 per accessible square foot. And as I mentioned, there are 4 properties that opted out by the December 12th deadline. And again, they will, at some point in the future, if they develop and connect to the sewer system, then they will pay the then current level of fees. This project is a partnership between the Bureau of Environmental Services and property owners. The estimated cost of the project is $391,000. We are assuming donation of easements. And of the $391,000 estimated cost, the cost would be roughly split 50-50 between the property owners via the LID and the Bureau of Environmental Services. Just to recap past and proposed projects in this area, there was a previous LID called the Royal Highlands Sanitary Interceptor Sewer LID, which funded construction of the pump station in the area, and that LID was assessed about 15 years ago. The infrastructure is important, but unfortunately, BES does not have full control over all of the connection to that pump station, and some of the connection to the pump system are via a current private sanitary sewer system in Royal Highlands. If council approves this LID, that will become a public sanitary sewer system, and BES will then have full control over those connections. So just to recap the current proposed project, BES will acquire and upgrade the existing private sanitary sewer. The project will enable the elimination of parallel private and public sewer systems, which is inefficient. The existing infiltration and inflow problems will be addressed. Sanitary sewer volume will be reduced during wet weather events. And perhaps most importantly, the potential for sewage discharge into Balch Creek will be reduced. And it will also reduce the risk to the existing pump station. And then finally, BES is evaluating the capacity of the existing pump station. I don't know that we have an exact timeline when that might be expanded in the future, but those costs would be paid for by BES and would not be funded under this or a future LID. And just to close, I just wanted to show you a few pictures of the Balch Creek watershed, sub-watershed, I should say. This project is a partnership between the property owners and BES and reduces the likelihood that there may be sewer discharges into the watershed, the pictures of which you see here before you today. So Matt Hickey and I are available to answer any questions you might have about the project. And we do have some property owners here to testify. Thank you.
Any questions from council? Commissioner Fritz.
I'm noticing that the price level confidence is low, and you explained last time that that's because you don't design it. Who pays if it goes up?
Because this is a capped cost, if any of the costs except for right-of-way go up, then Bureau of Environmental Services would pick up those additional costs. If the right-of-way costs are greater than estimated, then those costs would be spread among the property owners.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Did you want to say anything?
No, I appreciate your support on this. It's a good project.
All right, then let's go to the testimony, Carla. Thank you, gentlemen.
Before people signed up, first three are Glenn Rubin, Suzanne Clausen, and David Morrison. Come on up. Glenn Rubin, Suzanne Clausen, and David Morrison.
Good morning. Welcome to the City Council.
Hello.
We just need to know your first and last name, and you'll have 3 minutes to testify, and that countdown clock in front of you will give you a sense of how much time you have.
Is it three for me or three total?
Three each.
Each, okay. I'm Glenn Rubin. I moved into this neighborhood about 25 years ago. When I bought the house, it's at a lovely location, as you've seen in the pictures. I was warned by the then current owners that there was a problem with the sewer situation there. Those owners, by the way, went on to become city attorney and U.S. attorney. I should have listened to them. But there was disputes over the payment, over who ran the then pump station. It wasn't a pump station. It was just a treatment station. But anyhow, that sewer situation there has kind of been an albatross for the whole 25 years I've been there. There have been disputes with who runs the plant, whether it's current technology or not, what to do if there's breaks in the line. And that's one of the reasons we formed an LID some years, 10 or 15 years ago, to deal with the pump station that was polluting the Balch Creek area. We thought at the time, or those of us that lived there at the time and paid for that project, that that was the end of it. But it seemed that we misunderstood that the lines under the street were still ours. We thought the city took over everything at the time. But anyhow, this current state, there have been a lot of problems even in the last 15 or 10 years with the lines. There have been many breaks in the lines. There's been sewage polluting the area. I personally had a break. One of my young kids came in and said that the street smelled like the toilet bowl. And I went out there, and sure enough, there was raw sewage coming out where the pavement of the street ended on my property edge, and I had to have that repaired at my own expense because I got many different responses from whoever I called in the city. You know, yes, it's our responsibility, no, it's your responsibility, but I couldn't let that situation go on, so I spent about $5,000 of my own money just to get that fixed. And it's still not clear to me whether it was under the street or coming from my yard, but I had the whole thing rerouted. There have been other breaks over the years. There have been squabbles between neighbors over whose feeder line is responsible to pay for the repairs of these different breaks. So anyhow, I think it's long past. We'd all like to get this thing cleared up, have it upgraded. We're willing to pay, you know, our fair share of it. We've already paid 10 years ago, but we're willing to pay again. At least the majority of us are, more than three quarters. And so I just ask, you know, please, let's get this thing cleaned up and fixed, and so it's going to run like a modern sewer system should run. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ma'am?
I'm Suzanne Clausen. I moved to the neighborhood 10 years ago. I had no idea when I moved to the neighborhood that we were knee-high in sewage and that there were also developments that were going to wipe out the entire hill. I sort of think it's sad to look at the Balch Creek area and realize that there are 21 houses that are being built above my property in an area that somehow didn't get included in the Balch Creek reservoir area or conservation area. It's been a very enlightening experience to move into a neighborhood that's had a lot of contention, and it's been a difficult experience. I came from inner southeast Portland, where everybody was really close and good friends, and we loved each other. And this neighborhood has been in constant fight, hiring attorneys. And today you may even hear from one of the neighbors who continues to feel uncomfortable about the decision about the project that's built above us, and I think is carrying that into this conversation about the sewer. They're very unrelated situations. My husband and I do support this. We both are retired teachers, and we don't have a lot of money to pay for this, but we're going to do it anyway because we believe that the neighborhood will be better off when they get the sewage system straightened out. So I guess my only piece of advice is if anybody ever moves into a neighborhood, try to figure out what's going on there before you move there, although we do love living there. So we are in total support of having this project completed.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate it. Anybody else signed up to testify?
Yeah, one more person, oh. John Nee.
Good morning. Welcome to the City Council. You just need to give us your first and last name, and you'll have 3 minutes.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm John Nee, and I am a resident of this neighborhood. I've been there for about 5 years, and that's when this project really started for me. I learned soon after I bought the house about this ambiguity around the sewer system, and so I set out on a project that quickly turned into quite an adventure in learning about the history of this sewer system. It consisted of research. We went through lots of documents, my wife and I, learning as much as we could about the history of the sewer, speaking with longtime residents, and then doing some research as well. There was plenty of site surveys that were included. We did interviews with the neighbors, longtime residents, who some of who you heard from already, who had firsthand accounts of the history behind this, and then also several meetings with the city. We quickly engaged members of BES to learn more about the situation and what we could do to resolve it. So our first approach was really to resolve this ambiguity and to see what the best solution was. We learned quickly a few things. Number one, gratefully, that the sewer was in good shape. We did a site survey of that, video survey of it with neighborhood funds. We passed the hat to expense that and really showed a signal to the city of our seriousness and willingness to work on a resolution. We learned that there were modest repairs, but that these were still extensive enough that were probably outside our control and a little bit too aggressive than what we could handle as a community. And then also we learned that city ownership could extend the life of the pumping station. And the long term, this could save the taxpayers of Portland thousands of dollars. The solution that's on the table now, the LID, I consider to be a compromise. It's the right thing to do at the right time. I'm proud to be a member of the Royal Highlands neighborhood and of the city. I think the way that we've worked together over the last couple of years to come to this solution is really a model of civic behavior. And I think that the support, the 78% support that we have, is really a signal of the neighbors' commitment to this project, and in any Democratic vote certainly would be considered a landslide. I just want to take a couple seconds here to recognize a couple of people who I'm particularly grateful for. Matt Hickey, Bill Ryan, and Lisa Libby, all with the BES of Portland. I want to thank them for their service, for their good judgment all along through this process, and also their creativity in working with us for a solution. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anyone else, Carla?
That's all who signed up.
Anyone else signed up would wishes to testify on Balch Creek? Any other conversation from council? If
I just want to commend the staff and the citizens for working on this. Obviously, it's not fun to be paying for something as basic as sewers. So thank you for your work.
So this is a resolution. Carla, will you please call the roll call?
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Again, I want to echo the comments of Commissioner Fritz. Thank staff for an excellent presentation, and members of the public who came to testify. Aye.
Saltzman?
I also want to thank Andrew Abbey and BES staff and Lisa Libby, who is with the mayor's office, for their great work. And thank you, Mr. Nee, for calling their out there the staff's work. This is a project that is contentious, and hopefully we'll put a lot of the contention to rest and give you a good, high-quality sewer that you can all be proud of. Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Sorry.
John, I want to thank you for bringing this to my attention 3 years ago when I was sewer commissioner. Very contentious, very difficult issue. I also want to thank those of you that testified and worked on this, and staff, Andrew and the BES staff, and Lisa Libby in my office. This was a very, very difficult project and very necessary, and I really appreciate your willingness to compromise and work together. Aye. Carla, will you please read the title for item number 143?
Accept the master plan for Cathedral Park as a guide for future development and management of the park.
Commissioner Fish.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm going to ask Brett Horner and Carol Mayer Reed to come forward. One of the great pleasures of being Parks Commissioner is that you get to introduce the teams that come to us with updates of park master plans. And today we'll be hearing a presentation on the Cathedral Park master plan. Now, I know that you are all familiar with Cathedral Park, but I want to make a few observations before I turn it over to our crack team. Cathedral Park is an urban oasis, one of those rare Portland places with direct access to the river. The place has deep historic roots. It was originally occupied by Native Americans and was visited by Lewis and Clark. Its recent history was industrial, reportedly the location of the nation's first plywood mill. This is truly a people's park. It was cobbled together out of forgotten land, tucked on under the iconic St. John's Bridge. The cathedral part of its name refers to the view through the bridge supports. The soaring arches looked to many like the inside of a cathedral. First dedicated in 1980, the updated Cathedral Park Master Plan will give us a conceptual vision for the next 25 years. I want to thank Kip, Kathleen Wadden from the Portland Parks and Rec for her great work, Carol Mayer Reed, who is an internationally renowned landscape architect, for her work, and Brett Horner. And I also want to thank all the neighbors and the stakeholders that have participated through this public process, culminating today in a presentation to the council of this master plan update. We're going to have a presentation. First, Brett is going to introduce Carol. Carol's going to walk us through a PowerPoint. Mayor, we've invited four or five citizens to come forward. We're going to ask you to suspend the rules, or not suspend the rules, but exercising your discretion. Limit testimony about a minute because we understand we have a very busy schedule today. We want to make sure that the council has an opportunity to ask any questions they have. And again, I want to note that while we are asking for the support of this vision on the Cathedral Park Master Plan, it is worth noting that we don't have the funds to actually do the work, and that is will be our challenge in the years ahead to find the money to actually realize this vision. And I also want to just note that a master plan is not a document fixed in stone. Between now and the time that we do have the funds to implement this vision, we will have an opportunity to fine-tune the plan in response to both economic realities and to perhaps further concerns raised by stakeholders. But what we're being presented today with is a vision, and it's my pleasure to turn it over to Brett.
Thank you and good morning. We're happy to be here to present this new master plan to you. For one of the city's most treasured places. I'm going to hand things over to Carol Mayer Reed, who worked on the project, and we also have Kip Wadden here from Portland Parks to answer any questions at the end of the presentation. Carol?
Thank you, Brent. Excuse me. As you mentioned, Commissioner Fish, Cathedral Park was dedicated in 1980, and it came about through a citizen effort to reclaim a piece of waterfront land and to connect St. John's to the riverfront. And we were those of us who worked on it years ago were inspired by that group, and I think some of their principles that they were and their beliefs then still hold true today. So I'm going to go through this fairly quickly, and want to get to what the essence of the issue is today, which is the approval of the master plan. The purpose of the master plan was to prepare a vision for how the park will allow for increased use without compromising the essential character-defining features of the river and the historic bridge. It's located on the Willamette River directly beneath the St. John's Bridge in North Portland. It truly links the downtown of St. John's to the river. It's an important destination on the Willamette Greenway Trail, and it's part of the 40-mile loop. The park contains only one of two public boat ramps on the east side of the Willamette River, and it's prime waterfront recreational site in the north reach of the river. It's bookended by two industrial areas, the Port of Portland, and otherwise it's starting to see a lot more infill residential. And Forest Park forms a backdrop of this beautiful scenic bridge and the park itself. The site has a colorful history. It was formerly the industrial site, the first plywood mill, James John's store, the Native American encampment, the landing of Lewis and Clark. But over time, now the neighborhood is truly in a transition from the waterfront industrial and manufacturing to a much more higher density infill housing. And we really expect this trend to continue because the city needs to accept greater density. The city's award-winning Water Pollution Control Lab is directly south. On the north side is the Marcom property, a privately owned Superfund site that we have high hopes for fixing in the future. And then the active Union Pacific Railroad bisects the park, and it's an active line today, working with whistle-free improvements for the neighborhood. We went through an extensive process throughout the duration of the project, stakeholder interviews, five public advisory meetings, technical advisory meetings, open houses, and a lot of outreach at the summer events that took place. And this slide just shows many of the activities that occur in the park. The Cathedral Park Jazz Festival, the Oregon Symphony plays there, the Pirate Festival. There's lots of private events such as weddings and picnics. It just has a great amount of use by individuals and groups of all ages, and we truly believe it's the most photographed bridge in the city, if not the state. So it's a very scenic resource. But yet you can see in this next slide, over the last 28 years, the park conditions have really become degraded and worn. Facilities, lighting, landscape, signage, furnishings, ADA access all need to be upgraded. The state-of-the-art sustainability and green principles need to be applied to this park. And we also understand the waterfront has special needs. It needs to be renovated and more balanced for public use and habitat. This next picture, the image on the right, is what inspired the citizens of St. John's to advocate for the land to be purchased as a public park. And you can see the diminutive figure of a horse standing there underneath the bridge. That was the photograph that inspired the majesty and the scale of this bridge and was so engaging for the neighborhood. So what we really wanted to do was revisit the park, understanding what's needed, project out 25 years, understand how we can balance the public use and protect natural resources. This is the key to the success of the park. So this program diagram is what we use when we're looking at all the different relationships in the park. It's called a bubble diagram. You can see there's a view corridor of the historic bridge that sort of forms the east-west spine of the park. Three alternatives similar to this were shown to the public for discussion. Most agreed that the bones of the park are very strong. Big moves didn't necessarily need to be made, but certainly upgrades to it. And we just wanted you to see sort of one of the diagrams that was used in process. But again, the balance of the public use space with the natural resources and the upland habitat connectivity to Baltimore Woods, you can see through the sort of bright green bubbles there that extend all the way as a spine from the waterfront through the Cottonwood Grove all the way up along the north edge of the park to Baltimore Woods. This next slide is an illustrated version of the park showing the pathways, the use spaces, the boat dock, the improvements, and the vegetation massing. And I'm just going to briefly go through in a little bit more detail how this park lays out. And again, we haven't moved any of the essential components of it, but we've worked within all of those to put the upgrades into place. The next diagram shows the Willamette Greenway Trail in red moving through. And when this park was initially thought of all those years ago, no one had thought about what a Greenway Trail would mean or that one could even possibly exist. So this was a new conversation to think about the park in terms of being a destination on that Greenway Trail. And then the yellow line that sort of follows one of the pathways through the park is an alternative that certainly you can ride your bike or walk through on any path in the trail, but these two would be designated on the map as the official greenway trail moving through it. And then the pedestrian pathways on this diagram are indicated in purple. We had a lot of participation in our open houses and our public meetings, and we had testimony from several people who felt it was really important to have loop paths and even level spaces in the park where they could really circulate and enjoy the waterfront. So we have added a few pathways into the park, and we've also added some that help the ADA access. From the red line to the right-hand side of the top of the park, there's quite a bit of topography involved, so getting accessible use into these spaces was really important for the general users. So the next slide shows the upper park improvements. There's a section on the top of the screen that you can see the topography that I was just talking about. This section is taken through the performance amphitheater. And some of the improvements that we envision for the Jazz Festival would include a flexible new stage and permanent cover, seating, expanded seating in the amphitheater bowl, stone seat walls, more accessibility, and even utilities for vendors. There's Crawford Street that's running through the middle of the park, and we would expect that there would be improvement to that street. It's currently unimproved, but we'd extend some parking along there, and then to the right, to the left hand of that would be a flexible use space, a history garden, excuse me, a restroom, and improve railroad crossings. And then throughout the park, we'd look at play environments that have been requested by the neighborhood so that children have more opportunity to play. Right underneath the bridge, we would be showing an extension of a historic promenade that goes down beneath the arches of the bridge. And then at the top of the plan, you can see where we've accomplished the upland habitat improvements through removal of a parking lot and being able to create that connectivity in the upland landscape. And the next slide is the lower park improvements. And at the terminus of Pittsburgh Street, there would be a new Green Street and pedestrian overlook, a new light watercraft launch, and upgraded fishing dock. In the central bowl, the beach and lawns would remain open and flexible for views of the river, the casual use picnics, as well as programmed events and activities. So, you know, if any concert venues want to use this, it would be similar to Waterfront Park, where they're really staging everything in and they're bringing in temporary facilities. It's a very inspirational environment. And then you can see on this slide, there's sort of a little red box that we have shown there where off-channel habitat improvements will include a pedestrian bridge over a regraded bank that allows seasonal water to enter an existing swale. And again, this supports the notion of this upland habitat connectivity. And we see this as a great place for opportunities for interpretive how riverine and upland habitat are interrelated and send an educational message in the park. And then the north part of that meadow shows more riparian plantings and picnic areas and flexible use space. And then the last slide here is the boat ramp improvements at the north end of the site. Improvements will be made to the boat ramp. As you can see from the photograph, it's not as seaworthy as it once was when it was brand new. It needs to be upgraded to the Marine Board standards. There's some safety issues with it. The restroom needs to be upgraded and the parking lot. And then we also, one of our strategies in terms of how to balance this use of human to habitat would be to provide specific places for people to be in the park, so reinforced overlooks of the river. People want to get to the river, but we want to give them a place to be so they can engage with the river, learn about it, and not disturb the wildlife habitat. So that kind of gives you an overview of what we went through during the master plan. I'd be happy to entertain any questions that you might have.
Questions from the council? Good job. It looks great as a resident of North Portland. It's just intuitively getting your presentation for the first time, you can see that you've involved a lot of local input in the redesign because it looks right.
Carol, thank you very much. Perhaps what we could do is go to the invited testimony, and then if there are any questions prompted by that, have you back. It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mayor, we've been We've invited a number of people who participated in this process to briefly address us, and I'd like to call up Jerry Williams, Barbara Quinn, Andrew DeVoe as our first three. Jerry is a familiar face here at City Hall. I don't know where she finds the time to do everything she does, but in this instance, she served on the Cathedral Public Advisory Committee, and I believe she was representing the Native American Youth and Family Center in that capacity. Barbara Quinn is another representative of the Public Advisory Committee. She is from the Cathedral Park Neighborhood Association, where she's the chair, and she's also friends of Baltimore Woods. And Andrew DeVoe is a representative also from the Cathedral Public Advisory Committee, and he is a resident. Welcome all. Jerry, would you like to lead us off?
Sure. Thank you very much. I'm Jerry Williams. I am a city employee, but I was representing the Native American Youth and Family Center, which is a great and growing organization working with the leadership in Native families. And as many of you know, I'm the program manager for the Diversity Civic Leadership Programs, in which we ask people from the community to come in and join our boards and commissions at the city. So NAIA felt it was important to also ask from the other direction that I go represent them on a project as well. It was a great honor to do so. One thing that I think you know about me is that I'm kind of a process stickler. I tell you when I think the process is good, and I tell you when I think the process is bad. And I've sat on committees sometimes for as much as 10 years telling folks the process wasn't so great. This process gets an A+. This process, folks were listened to. It was an inclusive process. What I observed from this particular staff of people was that they listened to the community, that they sought out great diversity on this committee, that they asked a lot of people a lot of questions, and that they listened, and that they responded to the community from what the community said, which gives this process for me an A+. It was an absolute joy. I've never worked on something that that was so fun and great as the Cathedral Master Park Plan, and the staff was incredible. Carol, especially, who had been working on the project so long ago, added an extra flavor by participating in this process as she had, 30 years previous. So there was a wealth of great information. Thank you.
Jerry, if I could also just comment, in light of the history of this site and the deep roots with the Native American community, one of the thoughts that I think is that we can look down the road to is whether there's a way to blend our public art with some reference to the Native American tradition on that site, and maybe bringing an artist from the Native American community or some theme. So that's something that Carol has mentioned to me, and I think would be very appropriate as we move forward.
Absolutely. And one of the other things I appreciated was that they looked at it historically and what it meant to all the different people who have used it, from pirates to Native Americans, throughout the hundreds of years. And that's what made it such a great process.
Thank you. Barbara?
Thank you. My name is Barbara Quinn. Well, gotten an introduction already. I agree with Jerry. This has been a great process. There was a lot of listening, creative listening going on, a lot of great solutions. One of the best citizens advisor processes I've ever been involved with. I highly support this plan. I hope you do. I have a couple of more detail-oriented suggestions. Since I don't have a lot of time, I'll just go ahead and get right to those. The Willamette Greenway Trail, I think, is going to be incredibly important in the next 25 years. I think it's going to be of growing importance. And I think that the bicyclists are going to be of both commuter and recreational. They're probably going to be likely to use that waterfront trail as a commuter trail, especially during the weekdays. And I noticed there's a little jog on the trail at the Philadelphia Street turnaround that I think that we're going to hear a lot of complaints about over the next 20 years, unless we can straighten that out and make it a little more maybe bike friendly. The other thing that I'd like to mention too, I really love the fact that we've done tree cover in the park. That's going to meld with the other tree cover in the neighborhood that we're trying to work at preserving. cover also involves underbrush. And so if we can maybe work at underbrush that's more of an open nature, like, for instance, wild currant or even sticker-oriented underbrush, that would be great because that would accomplish a couple things for us, you know, providing critter cover at the same time, not encouraging negative stuff. So the Willamette Greenway Trail is the main thing I wanted to mention. I think that's, you know, maybe that's going to be work out in the details, but I wanted to make sure I mentioned it because I think it's going to be an incredibly important trail in the next number of years. And the other thing I wanted to make sure about was that the language of the plan, and it may be somewhat open now, but make sure that it's open so that if we need to do more animal restoration work in the next 25 years, that we can add marshy areas as we need to, or more riparian work as we need to, more maybe even upland work as we need to, so that it's an acknowledgement that this is a park that has a really intense environmental purpose as well as a human purpose. So just to leave it open. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Andrew?
Yes, yeah. Good morning, everybody. My name is Andrew DeVoe, resident of St. John's. I, too, found that the process was very well supportive. We got a lot of community input. There was not one negative response that I heard from anybody throughout this whole process. Everybody's really excited, and everyone agreed that some updates were needed to the park. For the past few days, I've been trying to think of some reasons everyone to share with you that of, you know, why I, too, would like to see the park enhanced. I have several, but before I left the house this morning, I asked my five-year-old daughter what reasons to share with you and why she would like to see the park enhanced. Her quick response was a playground, followed then by the festivals. So with many of the things that Carol's already outlined for you, as far as what we'd like to see in the plan, that would, you know, add to making the park much more family-friendly. As some of you know, for example, if you go to the park now, if you want to use the restroom, you have to walk completely to the other side of the park. Mm-hmm. That's always difficult for families. But just overall, you know, just general use of the park with the expanded beach area, the safer docks, and the other amenities that Carol's outlined would be a great addition to the beautiful park with the historic and extremely popular St. John's Bridge that towers over it. Thank you.
Well, I compliment you for getting constructive advice from your five-year-old in the morning. My five-year-old generally won't talk to me in the morning, but he takes his cue from his 16-year-old sister, so I think there might be some competition going on. Thank you very much. Is Sebastian Deegans here? And is Bill Egan here? So why don't you come up, sir? Sebastian Deegans is a representative of the Port of Portland Marine Services Planning Manager, and he'll be addressing the Cathedral Whistle-Free Zone. And Mr. Egan is a representative of Oregon Bass and Panfish. Welcome, Mr. Deegans.
Good morning, Mayor Adams, Parks Commissioner Fish, and other commissioners. My name is Sebastian Deegans. I manage the planning and development for the Marine and Industrial Division. And for the record, my address is 121 Northwest Everett. It's a pleasure to be here today to say a few words in support of the Cathedral Park Master Plan. I'd like to compliment Kip Wadden and the design team, particularly Carol Mayer Reed, for producing a really beautiful document and creating a very vibrant plan. I've enjoyed the park for years since I came to the Portland area 28 years ago. In fact, St. John's was my first stop. On lucky days, I get to go to work using the boat ramp. I spent several years developing the state-of-the-art Toyota facility just downstream. But lately, working together with a group of Cathedral Park neighbors and interested agency personnel, I've been working on a whistle-free zone to address rail noise in that area. In the interest of time, I won't explain what that is. I think you have some background on that. If there's questions, I'll be able to handle those. But fundamentally, we've been working on the problem since 2006. We developed a plan for a whistle-free zone after looking at lots of alternatives, and a plan that we hope will be before you shortly. I'd also like to point out that the whistle-free zone is being considered for MTIP funding at the next JPAC meeting on March 5th, and we'll need your support. We were really fortunate that the Cathedral Park Master Plan has recognized the role the park can play in addressing all the concurrent interests in the area. The park's redesign has kept the compelling features, such as that grassy amphitheater that sounds so good, and the popular boat access to the harbor. But through this outreach process that's been discussed, the plan also identified and integrated all the safety improvements for pedestrians and cyclists and accommodates the crossing protections at North Bradford and Pittsburgh streets at each park entrance, all of which, those three things that I mentioned, are all essential elements of a whistle-free zone. To create a truly sustainable working waterfront city, we need to figure out how to keep opportunities to work close by, move freight, and improve the livability of the neighborhoods and do this all at the same time. It's a huge puzzle with lots of complexities, particularly in St. John's with its redevelopment pressures in the Cathedral Park area on mixed use and industrial and the industrial waterfront. I think what we've got here is potentially a model for other parts of the city struggling with how to do it all, support employment opportunities, diversify the tax base, bike to work, move cargo, have a park. It's exciting to be moving forward with the Cathedral Park Master Plan that addresses so many needs of at the same time, and thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of the Cathedral Park this morning, and thank you again to the Parks Bureau for involving us throughout this process. Thank you.
You figured out a way to take your boat to work?
On occasion, we have we've used a boat ramp. I've used that boat ramp for sediment testing, for waterfront inspections, and it's a great place to. We actually have a small skiff that we use for some of our smaller jobs. So, yes. Great.
Thanks for your testimony.
My name's Bill Egan. I'm with the Oregon Bass and Panfish Club. I'm also a member of the Portland Harbor CAG and the ODFW Warm Water Working Group. My main concern is a boat ramp. In the last 10 years, it's degraded greatly. You only have actually three boat ramps in the Portland area, the one off of McAdam at Willamette, a BES boat ramp that used to belong to the port in Swan Island, which is currently down, and the one at St. John's. At low water in August and September, there's a three-foot vertical drop-off at the end of that ramp. The water drops down so low that when people go to back their boats in, their trailers fall off the other end. We started 3 years ago calling the city about the conditions at the ramp and told them that, you know, there's going to be some lawsuits because there's major damage to trailers. And we were told we get sued all the time. We've been bumping our heads against Department of Parks, no offense, Commissioner, trying to get this thing restored. We dealt with the Marine Board, who last year had $77,000 in grant money waiting for the city to match and improve the boat ramp. Nothing was put in for it. I talked to the Marine Board yesterday. They don't have any money available until July, but the deadline for requesting money to repair that boat ramp is the 3rd of April. So it really needs to be repaired. It's used not only for industrial, but it's one of the heaviest used fishing facilities, and it's used year-round by water skiers, power boats, all kinds of people. It really is, it's collapsing about 20 feet above the very end of it where the concrete's settling because it's being washed out underneath. I've tried to get engineers down there to look at it, and no one will get with me. I've had ODFW out there. It is something that is both damaging people's property. The boat ramp is one of the economic centers of St. John's. It's heavily used, and a lot of people buy things in the area. They stop at Safeways. They stop at Fred Meyer's. We need to get that fixed. The overall cost of fixing it is probably less than $200,000. So, and I'm willing to get with you.
My understanding is that a commitment was made to you that once this master planning process was complete, which I hope occurs today with a positive vote, that Portland Parks and Rec would address your concerns. We acknowledge it is in need of repair, and I'd be happy to meet with you and our team at Portland Parks and Rec and map out a plan of action.
Yeah, one other comment on the 25-year plan. As you said, this isn't set in stone. There's a lot of things that need to be tweaked. And for the boating and fishing community, there's a lot of things there that there's been a fishing pier there for the public for 30 years. The current way they've designed one isn't acceptable and won't work, so we just need to get with you on that.
Yeah, this is, we view this as a living document.
Yeah.
And it will adapt over time. But thank you, sir.
Thank you both very much. Do we have any citizens signed up to testify?
No one else signed up.
Anyone in the room would like to testify on the Cathedral Park plan? Commissioner, do any of the commissioners have questions or discussion with staff?